Hashtag Revenge, brought to you by
Norpig. Warning, you are now entering the Blue Tiger 10, the intellectual dark web of comic book podcasting. Revenge is upon you.
Hit the music.
That's right, we're back. Another episode, another time, another tiger. I am comic book creator, your Lord and Savior, the one you think of late at night, all alone, on a night like tonight. That's right, I am Tad James Galusha. And with me, he's feeling pretty chipper, the big coach himself, getting ready. Just trimming the beard, letting the locks grow long, heart and soul, all the way. You love him. I hate him. Big Brian Bales. How's it going, Big Brian?
It's going good.
You weren't expecting that one, were you?
I was not. No, that one, you know, truly, truly caught me off guard.
You could say I caught you off guard. Like Taylor Swift caught the Niners off guard. Yeah, big shout out to Taylor Swift for winning the Super Bowl for the Chiefs. Yeah. She did it, everybody.
Listen, I need her to break up with what's his face now, and I need her to date a Mariners player. I don't care which one, any of them. Let's get that World Series to Seattle.
Wow. There it is. Yeah. Hot takes.
Yep.
Speaking of hot takes, the only thing really that I cared about that came out of the Super Bowl, if I'm being honest, because I'm a weirdo, right? Like, I don't care about that kind of stuff.
I didn't care about the game either. It was a good game.
I will say it was a great game.
Yeah, I didn't have a stake in the outcome. So,
nah, but there was one thing I did have a stake in, a big old beef stake in, and that was Deadpool Wolverine. Oh,
yeah.
You know, I was out. I don't care about mainstream characters. I don't. It doesn't interest me, but then that dropped, and I was like, damn it, you sucked me back in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yep.
It just seemed great.
Yep. I completely agree. I thought the trailer looked fantastic. Him with a wig on was
hilarious.
Scary.
Yeah.
I also, yeah, like, even though we've seen a ton of, like, behind the scene photos of Hugh in the yellow suit, I thought it was kind of cool that they just really teased him in the trailer. I actually liked that.
Oh yeah. 100%. I don't really want, and that was the thing, that trailer, the way it was set up, I wouldn't be surprised if most of that, not necessarily like the Wolverine clips and stuff and the fight clips, but like, yeah, that whole intro was just for the trailer itself.
It could have been.
Like, had, yeah. Here's one thing I'm hoping for, though.
Okay.
Hulk.
Yeah.
Perfect vehicle for the Hulk to just, yeah, show up.
Yeah. That would be pretty awesome. I don't know if you noticed. Well, actually, so Ruffalo spoiled that he's going to be in the new Captain America movie, like, yesterday. He spoiled that yesterday. So there's clips all that about it in the internet.
Is this with
Mackie?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Captain America, what is it called? Like A Brave New World or something like that?
I hope they fix that suit, man. Oh, so cumbersome looking.
Yeah.
I did not dig it. I hope Steve shows up a little bit.
I mean,
we don't know where he's at.
He's not. He won't. He won't because I wish he would, but it would completely take away from the fact that there's a new Captain America, right?
Yeah.
Like, I get why they wouldn't, but I also don't care. Like, I don't.
Old Man Cap would be amazing. He just Steve, just Rogers, just showed up just for an instance, just to, you know, like at the end credits, having lunch with Mackie. That would be great.
Yeah,
saying he's proud of him, something like that.
That would be cool. Right? But I don't know if you noticed this, but in the Deadpool trailer, so some of the stuff you saw, like, when he's fighting Wolverine, it's like in the wreckage of like a 20th Century Fox. You see the 20th Century Fox sign? So I thought that was pretty cool. I like it. It seems like they're poking fun at the multiverse shit, which is great because I am so sick of the multiverse.
I hate it.
Yeah.
The only thing I like about it is like that, what was it, that Loki storyline they did with it. That was fine. The rest, not into it at all.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. The trailer looks cool, man. I loved the, like when he was loading the guns.
That was really cool.
That was freaking so dynamic. Rad. Yeah.
So dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was,
people are saying it wasn't CGI. It was CGI.
What?
Yeah.
If you're that dumb, just turn off whatever platform you're listening to this through. If you don't think that him loading clips and pistolas
in midair
is real, then, and it's not CGI, you probably think pro wrestling's real as well. Sorry. Yeah.
It was like those magazines going in was 100% CGI.
Yeah. I mean, do we even know if that was even Ryan Reynolds could have been like a stunt guy? Who knows? But that definitely was a lot of CGI. But yeah, it was fun. It was a fun little thingy to see because I think people are so burned out from just soups on screen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think aside from like the last couple Spider-Man movies, I mean, they're really... hasn't been, and someone is just going to rip me apart for this take, but I just haven't been interested in a lot of like both Marvel and DC, if I'm being honest.
The Marvel movies, I think the bar, they just put the bar too high. Everybody expected every movie to come out and just be like amazing and have great stuff that filters into previous movies and the next movies. And it's just, I don't know, they're starting to get into the weeds on some of the characters.
Yeah. And
then we don't even have to, I don't know what Sony's doing. Sony's trying to be like, yeah. Oh, speaking of that, did you hear? So there's a bunch of interviews apparently with people who were on the Sony side of stuff.
Actors. Oh, like the Madam Web movie.
Okay. And when they got signed, it was basically because like most of these, you know, it's like, they don't pay attention to this kind of stuff, right? Like they have lives and families and stuff. So they don't, most of them aren't like hardcore, like Marvel fans.
Yeah.
But everybody wants to do like Marvel movies. Cause from a business standpoint, it's like,
it makes sense.
Part of it. Right. But Sony, when they would come and like pitch it, they'd be like, yeah, welcome to the MCU. We want to bring you into the MCU and play this character. Who's a really big deal. And then, and so it was one of those where they've been kind of misleading some of these actors.
That, you know what? That's like, I read a thing, they did that to Halle Berry to get her to come back for X-Men 3.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to come back. And then they wrote they pitched her an entire like sequence of like Storm.
Where she was like the main character, right? Like the focal point.
And one of the focal points, and also there was like scenes of her like in Africa, like creating water for drought stricken countries in Africa. And like they made an entire script for her, and that's what got her to sign on, and then completely were like, rewrote it. We just did that to get her to sign.
Sneaky.
Yeah.
But how much would that suck though? That you're like, man, I'm gonna be part of the MCU, and then you're on the like movies that everybody bags on. You're like, you're on the DC version, DC universe of the Marvel.
I know. James Gunn was just watching that trailer? Deadpool trailer with just disgust. Like, God.
I like to think that he like killed some intern in the room right there in front of everyone. Like,
yeah.
Just enraged.
It's like from Iron Man. Tony Stark built this in a cave. that was James Gunn yelling to some DC, like somebody at Warner Brothers about this movie. It looked great. Now, you know, I'll admit I haven't seen the Marvels yet, so I don't want to compare, but it's something that I will watch. It's on Disney Plus now. I'm going to check it out.
What is the Marvels?
It's the Captain Marvel sequel.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people didn't like it. I heard kids really liked it though.
Yeah.
I heard it did well with kids. I know it didn't do well at the box office.
No, none of the last couple, like outside of Spider-Man since Endgame and Guardians was really good, but
Guardians was good.
Spider-Man and Guardians, like, nobody cared about the Eternals. You know,
yeah, that was a while ago though, right?
Well, it was like their first big movie after Endgame, and
that's true. Yeah, they just kind of, I don't know. Then there's so many TV shows that are superhero based.
Everything
is superheroes. And I think it's just over, you know, people are just getting tired of it. Speaking of you know what I went and saw though?
What'd you see?
I went and saw Friday, that movie, in the Darkness.
Oh, yeah, yeah. How was that?
It was great. It was everything I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Everything I wanted it to be. Because I don't want to spoil it since it just came out.
Sure.
But, like, I will just say, it's not quite a horror movie. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's billed as one, but, you know, like, it kind of, you get through the horror aspect of it. Like a little further, like than halfway. It was great, man. It's just well shot. It kind of had they really did some great stuff where they really used the environment to tell the story.
I like the elements when they do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very 70s ish.
Okay.
And they use the elements, and like when they get into the deep forest, they use the forest to do create like nice cut scenes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very disorienting. But it puts you from the perspective of the protagonists, you know, the whole time.
Yeah.
And it was a really well done film.
Okay.
Really well done film.
Nice.
I hope people go and see it. But then again, I'm the guy who fresh ideas like this that people go like, I'm not interested in this.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I went with our Ron Trembath from, Trainwreck Society,
who's been
on here on the show.
Shout out to Ron.
Shout out to good old Ron. And, and it was just, we both kind of came walking away like, oh man, that was great. And
I like I movies told them, like that, man, that just kind of are different.
Yeah, and I told him, this is the kind of stories that I want to tell in comics. And then we were kind of joking that I'm never going to make any money.
That's fair. That's fair.
It's not, you know, I mean, it's not that kind of stuff just can't compete with, you know, they were advertising, you know what the big advertisement was? Hmm. Was Kong versus Godzilla. There's Kong versus Godzilla shit or Kong Godzilla. I guess they're now buddies now.
Yeah.
All over the show. Anyway, it was one of those where you're like, they even had the trailer in there with this, like all these other
sure.
horror trailers. And it was just one of those where you're like, man, all these movies are probably going to do better than the movie we're watching right now. And
I think it's one of those where I bet the budget on that was so low that amount of people who are seeing it, it'll be okay, if that makes sense. I don't think it's built to lose a ton of money.
The cool thing is they made up a language for it. They made up like a secret language for the filming of it for the actors. That.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was when I saw some kind of behind the scenes stuff. Cause critically people are just like the people that take film seriously are just going like, God, how is this movie not getting a bigger platform? But you know, there was four people in the theater opening night, Friday night. We went Friday night.
Oh, wow.
Oof, this is.
Yeah. It's not one that's going to put butts in seats. That's for sure. Like I hadn't seen a single advertisement for it. The only thing that I've seen is what you sent me. Otherwise I would have not known that movie existed.
And I only knew about it because on social media, I follow a bunch of A24 and Bleecker Street and all that kind of stuff. Cause I love the films that they put out.
Yeah.
They put some really interesting shit out there, but
You know what? We haven't recorded an episode since this happened, and okay. I wanted to address it.
Talk about it. What?
Well, I just wanted, you know, Carl Weathers, man, recently passed away, and you know, rest in peace, man, to Apollo Creed, one of the best to ever
Action
do it.
Action Jackson,
Dylan from Predator. There's been just a dude who has just seemed like, and from everything that I've read, has just seemed just like a genuinely well-hearted, good dude who did it as a professional athlete, as an actor, as a writer, as a director, and just
no controversies, no weirdness. Yeah. Like, I don't care what you say, like, pick your favorite big name action guy, whether it's Stallone or Van Damme or Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
They all have like these like very public skeletons in the closet.
Yep.
That if you knew them, you probably wouldn't like them. Let's just be honest. If they sure. were people in your life, you'd be like, what fucking dirtbags. Carl Weathers didn't have any of that. In fact, apparently he's been fighting heart disease for like,
I had no idea, years. Dude. Like I was shocked when I saw the news, and
he was just very private about this. And he just worked through it because, you know, but it probably, you know, that's, you know, luckily he was lucky enough to go in his sleep, which is good. But yeah, it's kind of crazy, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, he had some like iconic roles, you know.
Happy Gilmore?
Yeah, Chubbs, dude. Like, come on. Like, the dude could do action, he could do comedy, he could do drama, he directed, like...
Arrested Development.
Oh.
Like, people forget how great he was as a, like, reoccurring character on Arrested Development.
Yeah,
he was amazing.
Funny. And...
Yeah.
Man, I just... That's a guy that I'm like, man, I'll miss seeing him, you know. Like, I was looking forward to, you know, his return in The Mandalorian, and now, you know, we're not going to get that, which really sucks.
I would assume that they already filmed a bunch of stuff.
Dude, they're doing a movie called The Mandalorian Grogu. It comes out in 2026. So
just stick with the show. Don't do a movie and fuck it up. I'm sorry. I know you like that stuff, but oh man,
I would rather see a show than a movie personally, because you could just get more, but I'm excited about a movie. I think it'll be good.
So the way they were doing the show was just so great.
Yeah.
Like the way it was paced and stuff,
yeah,
and the way they set up the episodes, like,
yeah,
it was very episodic. I don't know. It was such a nice throwback to like old adventure serials.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. But man, I just wanted to give a shout out to Carl Weathers.
Are you getting emotional on me over here?
No.
All right.
No.
You know, it's funny. I when I woke up in the morning, and you'd sent me a link, or maybe I did.
I sent it to you. Yeah.
Pretty early, and I looked at it and I was like, oh, whoa. And Dr. Wife was like, okay.
Yeah.
So, and I'm like, god damn, like, this guy's like an American icon. She's like, I guess. Like,
man.
But she's never seen the Rocky movies. She's only seen Predator. She's hasn't seen.
Dude, my wife has only seen him, and her reference for him is Arrested Development. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird how you can have this guy who's like super iconic.
Yeah.
And then people would be like, oh yeah, Chubbs from Happy Gilmore. What else has he done? You're like, God, oh,
man.
God damn it, dude. It's Apollo Creed, man.
It's one of the most iconic roles of all time, dude. Like,
oh. Yeah. Yeah. Like, they did a whole spinoff series with his son.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't even in the movies, and in the movies still named after him, Apollo.
Yep.
That's how great of a character he
is. Yeah.
Yeah. Or were they Apollo
Creed.
Or Creed?
Creed.
I think it's called Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still. God. Still.
Well, we got a pretty cool guest today. You know that, because it's BTR, man. We love the whole indie scene of comics.
That's right.
People that are just paving their way. But Chris Retta of Critical Entertainment, the man, the founder, he's here. He's coming into the Tiger Den for the first time.
Well, let's get him in here.
All right, let's do it.
Check, 1, 2.
Tiger milk! Tiger milk! I like tiger
And we're back with a special guest. You may have seen his book somewhere on the shelf or at the occasional Comic-Con. That's right. We're here with writer, publisher, producer, founder of Critical Entertainment, Chris Retta. How's it going, man?
Good. How you doing, Tad? How you doing, Brian?
Good, good. Welcome. Welcome to the Tiger Den.
Yeah. Now, we had Mason here, I think. Oh, was that like a year or two ago?
Briefly, yeah. Briefly. When we were at Emerald City, I think it was 21.
Yeah, you guys recorded it at Emerald City, right?
Yeah, we did like a quick little thing. Yeah,
yeah, and it was chaotic, but it was fun. Mm-hmm. But now we finally we've got the big dog. Big dog is in the house.
Big tiger.
That's right. Big tiger. So welcome, man. It's been, I feel like this has been a long time coming to mm-hmm. you on the show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not too often you can have the writer and the artist on the same the artist podcast talking about book. Here, so.
Yeah, so. I've noticed there's not a lot of creators that actually have podcasts. They're kind of few and far between. Yeah.
A lot of white dudes though. So we're still in the category of, you know, every white guy has a podcast or every other.
I think there's a lot of podcasters who are writers and then artists, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think Tad's a little more of the artist who's now a podcaster.
I will take that. Because, well, you know what? Secretly, my biggest fear is that people will go like, oh, you're the guy who does a podcast. And I'm like, no. I'm the comic artist. I just happen to do a podcast as well.
It's kind of like all the sports talk. You know, there's the players who do podcasts mm-hmm. and know what they're talking about. And then there's the guys who've never picked up a basketball and they're like, oh, you got to do this and get this guy. And this guy sucks. And it's like, do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't want to throw shade at any of the other podcasts out there. Some of them are pretty good, but it's, when they start talking about like what makes good comics and good stories and stuff, they lose me. I end up drifting away as a listener because it's like they'll mention stuff where I'm like, no, that's not how this works.
Well, they'll be like, oh, the editors at, you know, Marvel or editors at this need to do this, that, and that. It's like if you've seen these publishing companies, the editors don't really do much, you know. An editor can't go to Mark Waid and say like, hey, can you change this storyline, bro? You know?
Oh yeah,
that's not happening.
No. I don't think a lot of people realize that so much of it is just keeping everything on schedule and like, yeah, they do the best work they possibly can, but it's just so hard to make sure that everyone's getting taken care of and you're actually able to hit like, you know, the company's able to like accomplish what they need to accomplish for the quarter, especially those bigger companies, you know, where any type of mess up and it's all of a sudden they're losing points on their, you know, profit figures. And then it's like, all hands on deck, you know, like it's, you know, this way they don't take a lot. They can't afford to take a ton of risks. You know, they just can't.
You really don't have time. I mean, I when I was interning at Boom, I'd be like, hey, can you guys should change this or, you know, like this needs some more depth. And it's like, hey, we got to release this book. I can't have this writer change this. No, you know?
Oh and yeah. Yeah.
Every publisher is like a house on fire. Really?
Yeah,
you sound like you're speaking from experience.
Yeah, speaking of, so if people aren't aware, like I first met you I think years ago at Emerald City, and which I still don't quite know how we got connected. I don't know. It must have been just like in a melee. Like there was a group of people.
I think you had a booth, and I
that could have been it. Yeah, that could have been it. And but like at the time you were just you were starting to do like independent books, and then later down the road, like you've got like your own independent publishing house essentially with Critical Entertainment. And then you have like links to some stuff in the LA with is it Patriot Comics is another entity
I'm also running Patriot Comic Books for producer Michael Mendelsohn, right? So
yeah.
We make comic book adaptations of his films.
Oh, cool. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot, dude. That's a lot to
It's just a lot to run. You're running a lot of different things.
It's a lot. I mean, I barely have time to write now. So like, that's the most challenging thing, is finding time to write. And then, you know, by the time I'm free up, it's like, oh, WonderCon's coming. Oh, okay. San Diego's coming.
And yeah.
But then I get even more slammed. So yeah, it's tough. We released in Diamond right last year, basically in November, and I got married in November, so I was planning a wedding too.
Oh my god!
Oh great, your first books will come out in November. I was like, great.
Well, congratulations, both for Diamond and for the wedding, man. That's great.
Thank you. You know, kissed one ring and you know bought another. So.
How's that going, by the way, the Diamond distribution? Are you guys finding a lot of success through that? Is that working out well for you guys?
So far, so good. You know, we're doing pretty good with Diamond. Don't mind my dog there. We're doing pretty good with Diamond. They've been friendly to me, you know. Of course, I'm an indie publisher, so, you know, expectations are at a certain level.
Sure.
Right.
But, you know, we've sold more copies of books than we ever have. You know, we just got the print numbers and for the First Americans. So we're sending that to print now. And, you know, I mean, we've sold a lot more than we would at cons and on our website and stuff. And we're getting a lot more sales on our website. Pretty much every other day, someone's ordering the First Americans. So,
I'll take that. I like that.
That's great. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So just being in Diamond kind of puts you more on the map.
Sure.
Global comics sales are going up. Our Comixology sales aren't, but that's because Amazon neutered.
Yeah, it's done. It's gone now. It's all Kindle now.
So they killed that. That was like a nice part of our business that just kind of evaporated.
Dang.
I wonder why they did, because I feel like when they first, Comixology first kind of took off and merged, like Amazon purchased them, right?
Yeah.
Like it seemed like people were so hopeful. You had so many big deals that were being cut. Like I knew a lot of people that had like Comixology exclusive contracts, you know, for like months. And then you never saw the projects. You know, there was all this talk about like Netflix and Amazon deals, just nothing. Like is the only guy, I think the only person who actually made it work for him was what's his name? Mark Miller, who had a few, you know, projects that went to what, Netflix, I think. But other than that, like, I wonder what the idea behind that was. Was it the juice wasn't worth the squeeze for Amazon?
I mean, I think Amazon bought it and they did what maybe like a common comic book store will do, where they just go, hold on, I just want to do Marvel and DC because it's way more work to try to push indie books.
Yeah. You
know, that was one of the nice thing about Comixology. It'd be like Marvel, DC, and then like indie books and like editor's picks and stuff like that. So like the Cowboy with Many Hats, that was like next to some Marvel titles on the front page. So like,
so crazy.
That was a great way for exposure. Now I'm just buried under Amazon. It's like buried under every single book ever published across everything, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that income was just evaporated.
Dang.
That's crazy. Well, let me ask you this. Cause like, I feel like even though we've worked together for quite a while now, I don't really actually know you that well. Which it seems like that tends to be the case for this industry, is like, you, like there's people you'll have relationships with for 10, 15 years, and then you'll never actually like have a like see them face to face or actually like have a conversation. So what made you, were you like a big comic guy back in the day when you were a kid? Like what made you like even like remotely even get interested in comics? Cause you know, this is like a very unique and, especially, I mean, I figure you're probably around our age. You're, I'm guessing, like, 30s, early 40s? I'm
turning 40 this year.
Okay.
Okay. So, Brian and I are both, Brian, you're what, 38, 39?
Yep, 38, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm 39. So, like, okay, we're all around the same. Because, like, you know, when we were kids, man, like, comics was, like, that, like, you may have read them, but you didn't tell
you
people. Didn't,
yeah, you kept that to yourself.
Yeah, it was kind of like your like private
dirty secret. Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad would take me to the comic shop once a week, and I'd get like one comic and a pack of cards or something.
Yeah.
And really, that's comics is something that really helped me with my reading comprehension really early. I sort of have a little bit of dyslexia. So like being able to read something like read a Spider-Man, you know, internal bubble or jokes while he's doing actions, like really helped me get better with reading. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd just read a bunch of Spider-Man, Batman, X-Men comics, right? Those classics in the 90s.
Right.
And I'd like draw up a little like Spider-Man versus Venom comic, you know, 5-page comic that I'd draw and color and stuff like that. I never really thought too much of it until I started doing like film in college.
Okay.
And
is that what you studied? Were you a film major?
I was a film major. I went to Cal State University of Northridge, the film department. I wanted to be a director, really.
Yeah.
A director writer. And, you know, it's like, right, the podcast comic book creator. You need like two roles. You kind of need two roles if you want to be a director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I kind of got into writing. And then I kind of, you know, everyone was adapting comics, trying to adapt comics into movies and stuff like that. And I looked into comics and I started reading a bunch of really great, like, independent titles. Age of Reptiles, you know, someone brought up on another podcast. You know, read that, Black Sad, all these other books, The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And I kind of fell in love with comics again. And I really wasn't reading Spider-Man and Batman anymore. I was reading like Blankets and Scott Pilgrim and all this different, you know, different comics that were original and creative. And yeah. I kind of fell in love with it. And I was like, if I can make a comic, you kind of have your movie done. It's like,
yeah,
it's all visualized and it's there. And it's a lot easier to give a producer a comic and have them look at it and visualize it than just read a 120-page script.
Sure.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It seems like that's been kind of the direction things are going in, right? Like, seems like that's, you see more like movie folks that are like investing in actually like taking notice of what type of stories comics are producing.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's Sin City. It's, what was that vampire one?
30 Days of Night?
30 Days of Night.
Yeah.
You know, my producer boss, he likes that movie and stuff. So, there's a recipe to success for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There is. And the margins are so thin in comics. They're really thin. So, like, you're really only going to be making your money back on optioning your stuff.
Right.
Right.
Now,
right.
Is there ever a hope, you know, being a film guy, saying I wanted to do directing, if the opportunity ever arose to like direct one of your is that still a goal for you to hopefully direct one of your projects?
Oh yeah. And you know, it's, you got to go through all the steps. And at one of the end steps is, okay, cool, I have this great story and the only way I'm going to option it is if I'm a director on it. But you can't do that until you've made a few films and stuff like that. So sure, that's like the end goal. That's the end goal. But for now, it's different. You know,
sure.
We option Zombie Zero. We have a director in the screenplay.
Wow. Congratulations. That's huge, man.
But with that, I'm not like, I have to be the director. And you can't change this and you can't change that. You know, so like that's a real red flag in the film industry, especially with new creators or a new script and stuff like that. So you can't be doing that.
That's interesting, because I feel like that's sometimes the way like some young creators are, like they don't want to budge on anything, like their pitches and stuff. Like occasionally I'll talk with like young people that are just starting out. They'll be right out of college and they'll have their idea, which, you know, like this is going to be
their magnum opus. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a groundbreaking comic. And you know, they'll have stuff in there and you're like, oh, you know, you should really think about shortening it, or you should really, like, it's gonna be really hard to get somebody to publish your 400 page graphic novel when you've never done one, even a like a 20 page comic or a 10 page comic, you know, like, yeah, that's a really interesting, it's a really interesting point you're making.
Well, yeah, like we started with Cowboy with Many Hats. That was 16 pages, right? And then I knew we could finish this project, and then I can throw you on something else, right?
Yeah.
So I did the same with all my other artists, and Mason's doing that a lot now too. So he's starting out with a lot more shorts and stuff. And yeah, it's like a progression, you know, you got to start at a certain level and try to move up, and you can't just be like, I mean, I've been with my producer when he's tried to buy stuff from people and they don't want to change things, or, you know, we've had one who was like, oh, my agent said this is the next Fast and the Furious. And it's like, dude, you know, who are you? Like, who are you? You know? So, yeah, a lot of new time creators, they got to let stuff go, man. You know? And I don't know if any other writers you've worked with, if they've been like difficult with, like, they give you a script and then you give them art and they go, whoa, you got to change this and this and that.
Oh, yeah. There's been a few writers that I've had in the past. I've been fairly fortunate, I would say. I've only had a couple that were real, like, and it wasn't so much the writers, it was like the company. It would be like, you know, like it'd be like a film studio or something, and I'd be doing like a graphic novella. And the hardest part was just they just micromanaged everything like they were on a film set, you know? Yeah. And I would always say, I'm like, this is taking so long, you know, like it's just like we need to just get through this. You know, like I can't do a 2-hour meeting for every panel on the page. Like that's just not doable. And that's where you run into it. But sometimes, yeah, you know, depending on the project. But I'll be honest, like when I worked for like IDW or Dark Horse or stuff like that, they were just all about just hitting. They just wanted it done. So they like just
came to the deadlines.
Yeah. Like there was one time it was like one of my earliest books, and I was on vacation in Alaska, So we were on the go, and I was like, okay, well, I still have to get like X amount of pages done per week, you know? And I drew the script was kind of vague on the certain areas, and I just misread it, and I drew the wrong characters doing something, and then I caught it like 3 days later. They didn't even care. They were ready to just take it to print. They'd already Yeah, and I lucked out that I went through the Kubert School with the colorist at the time, like who was on the book. And so I called her up just because I still had her phone number and was like, hey, page 16, I drew the wrong characters. Like I swapped them out here at the house, but I'll just email them to you directly because, you know, no knock on the publisher. Like they were just getting it out the door. It's my fault.
Yeah.
But it was one of those where like, thank God I had a personal relationship with the colorist or we would have been screwed. People would have been like, this doesn't make any sense. Like what?
What were they thinking here?
Yeah.
I think, you know, that's one of the problems with the publishing world, right? It's the expectations of monthly comics and deadlines. And, you know, people complain that stories are a little bland and quick, stuff like, well, this is why, you know, it's for our company, right? We don't try to, you know, we don't try to push you too much, Tad, because I'd rather have better work and the right characters than, you know, like,
yeah.
Then try to hit certain deadlines and stuff like a big publisher. That's just how it is, you know? And I'd rather you just be as creative as possible than be like, we gotta hit monthly deadlines and do this kind of weird, you know, once a month thing. It's just not realistic.
Oh yeah. 100%. And also, you know, with First Americans, one of the reasons I enjoy the project so much is that you guys let me take like artistic risks. Like you guys let me experiment with doing different things where I was just having this kind of conversation online with a bunch of creators. Cause I like the idea that where you curtail the art to the project itself. And so like for First Americans, you know, I was like, oh, I really want to look at someone like Sergio Topi or something like that. I think that that art style is so organic and there's a lot of energy to it. And it could make things feel bigger than they are. And there's no way any other publisher would have let me do that with if I was over at Marvel doing Wolverine and I decided to handle it like Critical, how we're doing First Americans. I don't think they would let me. I think they'd be like, well, we've seen you do this, this, and this everywhere else. Like, why are, no, we don't want you to. Even though I would say, like my wife likes to say, First Americans is easily some of my best work, especially issue two, chapter two.
Chapter two is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather it feel more like a passion project to you than like something you got to get out monthly and It's just so weird that the comic medium is, it evolves around Marvel and DC so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And they're a completely different beast,
Yeah.
And getting out a monthly comic, it's not realistic. It's so tough and you're juggling so many things. Yeah. You can't make changes. I've seen so many errors on The Walking Dead, just basic
sure.
180 rules and stuff like that. It's like Rick's pointing this way and then he's facing that way and then he's facing, and it's like, why didn't you change it? You guys just didn't have the time,
Yeah. That's yeah.
Didn't have the time. Didn't care, rather just get it out monthly than, and this is an art form. So it's like telling Picasso he's got to, paint something in, X number of days or something, it's yeah. just, each project's going to be different.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I kind of want to revisit, your film background a little bit.
If yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cause Bri did, he used the GI Bill a few years back and took some film courses and actually got accepted into a film program. But because we're, all approaching 40 and in Bri's case, he has family and, bills to maintain,
yeah.
going to film school wasn't
realistic. Cool. It was cool to get accepted, and that was kind of the end of it for me, unfortunately, but that's okay.
So
that's fairly common. That's yeah. fairly common.
I yeah.
see tons of people
yeah.
Who aren't just like 20 somethings,
Yeah.
Yeah. But you went through a film program. Did you? How was that? Because I went through art school for illustration and comic making. But film is just a whole nother animal. And I think a lot of comic artists we kind of hold cinematography as a high bar. Mm-hmm. it's almost it's similar to comics, but it's like. It's bigger. It's more well known. There's more provenance that comes with it. So, what was that like studying film? And then, did you make short films and stuff? Did you go through all that?
My actual emphasis was cinematography.
Right. Cool.
So, official degree is film production with an emphasis on cinematography. So that's why you'll see me try to layer things in the foreground, the midground, the background, I know how things are supposed to look cinematic, where things yeah. are coming at you and you try to have depth. So that translates a lot into comics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do a lot of, the camera shots and the how you set up scenes and how characters move and all that stuff kind of translates into comics. And yeah, so I want to be a director, so... the cinematography route was the way, you either go kind of the cinematography route, the writer route, the editor route. So I mostly did shooting. I shot some short films. So I have I have the 30-second short. I have the 2-minute short. Oh, I have cool. The minute short with no dialogue, a lot of kind of the exercises and stuff. And you basically watch a lot of films. It really is a major where you take a class and you watch, you talk about stuff for half an hour and then you watch a film for the rest of the 2 hours.
Interesting.
And you write papers on it and real in-depth papers, and you got to read the book and then watch the movie and write yeah. the paper. And It's very competitive. It sets you up for understanding that the film industry is very competitive, and there's a lot of things you need to know about it. And you got to have that attitude of like, oh, I want to sell my script for the first time. Oh, I got it sold. You can't be like, don't change this, don't change that, don't do this. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. they kind of humble you. So by the time you graduate, you already know it's really competitive. Where in the comic book industry, I feel like people don't realize like how many comics come out a week, you know, like 300 new comics a week and stuff.
God, so, that's crazy to think about. But you're right. Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh, my comic's going to be the absolute best thing right out of the gate. And it's like, you could be Frank Miller and it won't matter.
No.
Look at your stuff. You're not going to be on YouTube's top 10 comics of this week.
Yeah. No. I mean, it could very much well be the greatest thing, but if people aren't going to know about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I worked a lot with actors and all that kind of stuff, and casting calls and shooting shorts. And, I can tell you only like two people from my graduating class are still in the film industry, two or three people. So, wow.
This sounds weirdly like the Kubert School. So I went to the Joe Kubert School, right? And it was the same thing. It was like you just knew it was going to be super competitive. They kind of like grind on you the whole 3 years. And by the time you make it out, you're just like, so many guys are kind of, I don't want to say beat down, but just so burned out because they know that it's going to be so much harder that it's like they may do a few little projects and then only two guys from my graduating class are still, one gal and one guy are still working in the industry that I'm aware of anyways. Like, I don't know if anyone else in my graduating class.
There's so many people I knew who like moved out here. And then they're like, I'm going to be in the film industry. And then they move back, you know, they tried it for a few years and went, yeah, like this hill's too big for me to climb, man. I'm done with this. So,
well, and there's something so magical about like the Hollywood LA kind of dream, like to be involved in films and television that I feel like everybody at some point is probably dreams about it a little bit. Like what it would be like, to be in a TV show or making a movie or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I've lived out in LA my whole life. So, you know, you're kind of surrounded by it. And I was never like that till I actually started taking film classes and stuff. I mean, I was going to be like a computer programmer and all that stuff. And then I got so tired of these math classes and I was like, what am I really doing? I don't want to be in front of a computer all day. So now I'm a writer in front of a computer all day, but yeah. You know, it's a little different. And I don't know. I like being in a creative field. I like writing. I worked at a lot of production companies. I interned at a bunch of places. And I just read a lot of scripts. You know, they have you read a lot of scripts. And 99% of them were just garbage, like garbage scripts. And you just go, how did this guy get an agent? You know, and I was like, okay, I think I can do this. And that's how I kind of went more into writing, because I was great. I can do better than this. I can do better than a lot of these scripts.
Wow. Well, now, so was there any kind of, I'll just say, cause it was film, but like, are there any kind of storytellers that you like really, like grabbed onto, there's people get really into Kurosawa or like the, you know, 90s, everyone was obsessed with like Tarantino and trying to emulate like his, you know, back and forth, timelines that he would do and stuff like that.
My common phrase is everyone wants to try to be Tarantino, right? So
Yeah.
So like a lot of people's first scripts are like these Tarantino-esque things, you know? And it's like, dude, you're not Tarantino yet, man. You know, you can't just have a whole page of dialogue and think you're going to be great right out of the gate. Kevin Smith kind of popped up to me because he does the dual role, right? He does some comics and he does some, he does films too. We took a film style class where they basically show two films of the director and you'd watch the differences. So we saw like Clerks 1 and then you'd see Dogma. So you know, you kind of see his style. So I kind of liked what he did. You know, I loved Kubrick stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know, he's the goal, right? To be a director as good as Kubrick.
Yeah.
Kurosawa, right, is my favorite Japanese one.
Oh yeah.
So like, you're in film school, you watch Seven Samurai, 3 hour long movie, and you show your girlfriend, you're like, look at this cool movie, and you can't even get halfway through it, you know?
Yeah. That's happened a lot in this house. Yeah.
Same.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, you know, Gus Van Sant, you know, I loved Good Will Hunting. That movie really kind of inspired me too. That was one of the films that we saw in that class. And just seeing all the different ways you can shoot a film, and it brings out different emotions and what you're trying to convey. That's something that kind of really stood out to me. So like, that's some why I want to be a director, so I could, you know, try to tell a story and engage on the audience on a different emotional level. And I can do that with comics, you know. Yeah. I can do that with comics.
One of the things I like that you do with Critical Entertainment is you guys aren't afraid to like do something different. Like, I remember you sent me a while back, you sent me a copy of that Space Dragon. Not only was it like oversized, like the book was huge, but just the concept was just, is mostly silent. And it was just this dragon, like flying in space, like visiting different worlds. And it was so unique and interesting. Like, I don't know, you just don't see other publishers taking risks, or even just going like, this is cool, we're gonna publish this. Like, maybe I guess Image, but other than that, like, nobody else, you know.
I shop that book, I've shopped a lot of these books around, and I didn't get any responses, and you know, that's just how it is.
Sure.
I had one from one publisher, one of the let's say premier publishers, who was like, hey, I really like Space Dragon, was like the one that really popped out to him, but we just can't do it, man, you know. Just can't do it. That's all I got, you know. It's tough. That's what I'm saying. You could be such a great and talented creator, but it's so much harder to sell things that aren't Marvel, DC, or superhero stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, we got to understand that comics aren't just, you know, superheroes and stuff. And being able to get out of that box, I think, is where we should be going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. You know, Will Eisner wasn't making Superman comics, you know.
No. He was
making everyday, you know, comics about everyday life.
Yeah.
Kind of life.
Kind of interesting when you see the kind of books that win majority of the awards. Most of them are from, like, well, I guess people probably debate that, but good chunk of them are from superhero. Meanwhile, like, Eisner didn't do any none.
No. The spirit, right?
The spirit. That's
probably about be as close as you can get to it. But, you know, that's why I like the first American so much, you know. It's just different. I have different people who approach the booth and go, wow, this is interesting. I can show this in my class, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can bring it in my class
and show it opens up the door with a lot of people who I feel like are non-comic readers. And then being up here in Alaska, one of the really interesting things is just you know, like, I get a lot of like Athabascan families that will purchase it and then come talk to me about it. And they're just so thrilled that it's like, yeah, man, thanks for repping us. This is great. You know? And that's right there. You're like, oh wow. I wasn't even really thinking about that, you know, but it's one of those where you're like, okay, like, no, this representation is really important. Like, this is kind of cool, but yeah, like, it, I don't know. It always does great, in the Northwest and up here. The only time I've had any kind of pushback was I was at a convention in Portland, and I had some, I don't know what this person was talking about, but they were really upset that we weren't that we were telling the kind of story we were telling. It was really strange. They couldn't quite put it into words what made them so upset. I don't know. It, you know, it it really put me in a bad mood for that rest of that con, but it was the only person that I've ever had push back on it, and that was it. And
I would say get used to that, because you know, we're running an ad right now, and I've gotten a lot of comments that are kind of like that, where it's like, oh, you know, you're white, why are you doing this story? And that's
You know what, it wasn't even that, it was from a very white person, and they were like, basically they were like, I think they had a problem with the story because it went against some creation story from like an indigenous point of view, and there's tons of them, especially in North America. And I just was like, well, we're not telling that kind of story. We're not addressing any of the, you know, religions or beliefs. We're just talking about people coming from one place to the other. And I started talking some science and stuff, and you could tell she had no idea what I was talking about. But it was a really odd experience, and it shouldn't have bothered me as much as it did. But then when I give it to, like I said, I give it to actual Native Americans, people who, you know, are descendant from these people that we're depicting, they're the biggest fans of the book. You know, they're the ones that are the most supportive. So I'm like, okay, I don't care. I don't care. We're going to do this book regardless, you know?
You know, Mason told me, he's like, look, we made this in good faith. And, we're showing how courageous and important these people are. So it's all a positive book. You know, it's a man versus nature book. So, you know,
One of the characters, you could say woman versus nature, you know?
Woman versus nature, yeah. No, so. People versus nature.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, there's good intentions behind this book. So, hey, you know. That's
Someone told me, it was Steve Lieber, just the voice of comic reason in the industry. He goes, oh, if you got people coming after you and saying anything negative, and he goes, especially if it's just like, out of left field and it's ridiculous and it takes out of context like the project that you're doing and the message that it's portraying, he's like, then you're doing the right thing.
I mean,
any publicity is good publicity at this point, I guess. It's a really interesting point in time, and honestly, it's, you know, Native Americans have been pushed aside in this country, even though they've been here forever, right?
Yeah.
And you grow up kind of, you know, a lot of parts in America, part where I grew up, it was Christopher Columbus landed in America.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
oh, it was discovered for the first time, you know. And, you know, not to get like crazy political here, but when I was making this, it was immigration's bad, can't let any people in, you know. And look, people have been coming to America forever, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the country that people migrate to. So, you know,
yeah,
that needs to be kept in mind.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Talking about, while we're on First Americans, I'm just curious, like, what you kind of touched on it briefly, it's, you know, what you were thinking about when you were writing it, but what was like, what made you want to tell this story?
I mean, Tad and I came, you know, I pretty much went to Tad and I was like, what kind of stories would you like to tell?
Right? Oh, God. You know what? You're right. You did. I think you threw a few ideas at me. Like, you had a few titles, right? Maybe?
Yeah. I think I pitched you a few ideas, maybe. And, you know, you told me that you liked the Paleo-Indian culture and stuff up here. And so I basically did research on it. And when I did, a story kind of developed. So I kind of looked back into Paleo-Indian culture. And I read this book. It's called First Peoples in a New World, Colonizing Ice Age America by David Meltzer.
Oh, and yeah. I'm familiar with some of Meltzer's stuff. Yeah, he's good.
So I read that book and I was like, wow, you know, like a story kind of developed when I read that book. Right. He mentioned how people first were domesticating wolves for the first time. And so that's why I threw the wolf in there. And that was one of the things that he theorized that they used to get over the Bering Strait, is now they had like a wolf that could warn you of danger approaching. So, yeah. So, you know, the Wolves were a part of why we were able to go into North America for the first time too.
Wow.
Yeah. That domestication of canines is, it's interesting. It's almost as important or more important than like the construct of fire. You know what I mean? Like really mastering that fire. I feel like, it's really interesting when, lately I've been reading up a lot about like some of the theories coming out of Europe, you know, like, you know, you push the timeline back even further to, you know, anywhere between like 100 to 50,000 years ago, you know, and it's so interesting, just how you have these sub-Saharan peoples that were starting to move up into, you know, Europe and spread out through Siberia and stuff like that. And, Asia, it's just, I don't know. It's fascinating that people were able to do that and master all this, you know, all this land. Like, it's so crazy. It's just so crazy to me. Yeah, I you know, when we first talked about first Americans, I must have been on a, I was always on a, like, I was always a dinosaur guy. Like, I always liked the, you know, stuff like pre-mammalian epoch, I guess. And it was one of those, I was going through kind of epiphany, like, I don't really know much about ancient humans, like prehistory. And like now, like I just went and saw Friday. I did go see that, In the Darkness. I think you would love it, man. Like, especially as a film background, they really do a lot of like 70s, constructs, and the horror, without spoiling it, the whole horror aspect of the film is it's based on the human perception, you know, like, and that's kind of the whole thing where the protagonist might not necessarily be the protagonist, if that makes sense. And like, it has this like, oh, like even now as modern day people that, you know, we're still so like fear driven, you know, don't ask questions later, you know, it's almost too late. But anyways, yeah, the whole like ancient people's thing is just so fascinating.
I just like the idea of like going into a whole new land that no one's ever traveled before with animals they've never seen before, you know.
Yeah,
like it's the only time in history you really kind of get that. And yeah, you know, I just thought it set up a really good people versus nature story, and there are just so many cool elements, like the, you know, mammoths. You know, they think mammoths went from Siberia over there too, and us domesticating wolves. And, you know, there's some stuff in future chapters where, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's, what's the snake that's rattling? You know?
Yeah.
Nice. What noise is this?
Yeah. Cause you figure if you were a Siberian people and you'd cross through Beringia and you'd worked your way south, you would have probably never have any kind of knowledge of reptiles, right? Like especially venomous reptiles, and dealing with rattlesnakes or Gila monsters, like that would be like a whole nother beast you'd be tackling. You know what I mean? Cause it'd be so, you would be morbidly, it's like morbid curiosity, right? Like you'd have to, you know, they're very intelligent people. So they're going to be wanting to check that out. Yeah. I can't wait. It's going to be crazy.
And on the reverse side, animals have never interacted with humans before, so they didn't have any of the some of them didn't have defense mechanisms against humans. It's like, oh cool, yeah. Oh, this thing with the spear is walking up to me, oh it's stabbing me, shit, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
That's it. I just experienced that a couple weeks ago. I was up on the mountain and I ran into a young moose, and it wasn't afraid at all. It was like it'd never seen a person before, and you know, you're talking 1,000-pound animal.
Yeah.
And well, it decided it was going to check me out, and I got cornered up on like this ice shelf, and it was just one of those things where the whole time I was like, oh, this is what people had to deal with on the daily, you know, these megafauna that could just crush you.
And animals, like through generations of people trying to kill them, they know exactly, like at some point they learn exactly what to do and where to go. Like I've been elk hunting before, and they all go to the preserve where you can't shoot at them, and they just, they stand right at the edge, but they don't come across. It's like they know where they can go, where they're safe.
It's like when you drive into some of those towns during hunting season and the elk are all like downtown in like like in front of the grocery store. Yeah. Like, yeah, there's no hunting in the city limits. What's up?
Yeah. Nice try, assholes.
And right, the other cool thing about the story is, you know, 14,000 years ago, the animals were different too. You know, the wolves were big. The bears were huge. Like, you know, you do the bear in chapter two.
Yeah, the short-faced bear. Yeah, terrifying.
Yeah. Huge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, some of that stuff, you just... there's a part of me that wishes, like, a lot of that stuff was still around, you know, just to see it. But then after living up here in Alaska, because, you know, I'm a Northwest kid, so the biggest thing you saw was, like, an elk or a black bear. Maybe on a rarity you'd see a moose, you know, from a distance or something. But then coming up here, man, where you're like, oh, wow, yeah, like, it's like going back in time. And, like, my wife the other, 2 days ago, she saw a grizzly, like a big brown bear, big male that was, like, just on the side of the road, came out of den early. And, you know, she said it was, oh, yeah, it's huge, you know, just hanging out. And it's just one of those where, like, oh, wow, you don't, it's not something that, you don't forget, like, that used to be commonplace. Like,
right.
Massive animals just hanging around.
My buddy had a bear go through his garage into his kitchen and everything. You know, I grew up in a mountain town, so you'd get a few stories like that. Mountain lions come down and eat dogs and stuff. We actually rescued a wolf that would just frequent one of the parks over there.
Oh, wow.
We got the wildlife way station to come and rescue it because we were worried that, you know, someone was going to just kill it, you know.
Definitely. That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah. I really think that I hope people are enjoy. I haven't talked to anybody who hasn't enjoyed First Americans yet. And you know how fans are. They'll let you know.
Yeah.
they'll just come off to you and tell you.
I'm gonna throw something out here. Is when it's all said and done, when First Americans is finished, a book of that stature, it needs an oversized hardback edition. So I'm just, you're the guy. So I'm throwing it out there to you right now. It needs to be big, hardback, maybe a black and white version. I don't know, but something like that would be cool.
Well, yeah, I had the big space, you know, I had Space Dragon. That's a different size. I mean, should I be Distillery and have all my books look like, you know, be a magazine?
Oh, man. Yeah. What is your, because you're in the publishing game, right? You've published, how many titles has Critical Entertainment got under their belt now? What?
Like, I think we have like 22 products total or something.
That's great.
Total. So what do you think of when you see, you know, some of these places like Bad Idea or Distillery, they're trying, I mean, obviously they've got like real deep pockets. But some of their business models, at least for me, who's like kind of Brian and I both, we're meat and potatoes. Like, we like to go to the comic shop and just buy the graphic novel or buy the, you know, the floppy. You can't necessarily do that with their books. What do you think of their, do you have any opinions about what they're doing?
I mean, I've known Chip since he was working at Boom. So I know they have some strong, I guess, publishers or people at the top in there. But what, they have two titles? They have two titles, and they have the oversight. I hear a lot of complaints of, like, I can't put this in my comic box, you know?
Yeah.
Which is tough. You know, I like them. I like new indie publishers who are trying to do different stuff, right? It's not just superheroes and stuff like that. So they're trying some different, you know, I gauge all these different publishers differently. I look through the Diamond previews catalog and I go, okay, they got this many pages of ads and stuff. And, you know, it's whether they can afford it or not, and how deep their pockets are. You know, Aftershock, I paid close attention to Aftershock, and I would just go, how did they spend all this money?
Yeah.
And a lot of, there were a lot of books that weren't that great.
Yeah.
And I was like, these guys are going to go, they're going to burn to the ground, you know. Too much money. Those ads in the previews catalogs, they're expensive, you know. When you see when you see like a publisher has 20 pages and they're like $1,000 a page, and you wow. go, boy, why don't they pay their artists more? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's where all the money's going. Yeah. 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 It's just interesting. I don't know. Like Bad Idea is one that, you know, because they don't, I think you have to sign up through their like website. I don't even know if they have like do a traditional distribution.
They don't. Model. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all through subscription based. And then like, you know, their books are so expensive. Like they had that, what was it? Megalith or whatever it was. And that thing was like, it was like almost $100 just to get the first book.
Yes. And tons of challenges for yeah. new publishers. And, you know, there's a lot of talk of like, oh, comics are going up in price and stuff. It's hard to sell a comic for more than $5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And all the prices on everything have gone up. Printing, yeah. shipping, like the pallets. A pallet just to like ship your stuff is $50 now, where it used to be free. Okay.
Right. Right. Yeah.
The printer told me, it's like, remember you used to see like, you know, you used to see them on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And now you can't because they're expensive. They're like $50 a pop. So like, there's a reason why comics are going up in price. And
yeah.
It sucks only being able to sell a piece of art for $5, you know, yeah. when everything else has really jumped up in price.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel can sell a book for $4 or $5 or less because they can, you know,
right.
Image can, but it's, you know, Distillery and Scout Comics, you know, like it's tough. It's, and the second a comic book's more than $5, you're in trouble. Right. Mm-hmm.
Like yeah, issue
2 First Americans is, I think, like 66 pages, and we're selling it for $7. But it has to be like 60 pages, you know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, that's one thing I find has been really, people have been really curious about, is they like that the chapter, that it's chapters, that it's not just like 22 page issues. They like that it's like, oh no, you just get a, you know, here's your chapter, this is what's going down, and then the pages may vary. Like you said, issue 2 is pretty fat. It's like almost like a novella in itself.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you know, think of a normal literature book. The chapters are always different sizes. And, you know, I really try to approach comics more from an artistic standpoint, right? As like an art house where, I don't have to have it just be 22 pages.
Right.
So if the story's 44 pages, it's 44 pages. If it's 60 pages, it's 60 pages, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to limit myself.
Right. Yeah. I love that you said art house too, because I feel like even now comics still kind of get, they get a lot more respect than they used to.
Oh yeah.
But they don't quite get that reverence that, you know, like you said, art house, you know, like film, right? You've got the blockbuster films and stuff, but then there's the art house. There's the Criterion Collection. Those are the films that people like hold with esteem and the, you know, they'll go out and get the, they'll spend extra money to get.
Are you trying to tell me that the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is not an art house film?
Is it in the Criterion Collection yet?
It fucking better should be. Let's, you know, it should be.
Oh, those are great.
I'm going to start a petition.
Right. You know what? I've seen some of the Hong Kong stuff they've thrown in there. So why not? Why not? Throw it in there. It's part of Americana.
Well, like A24, right? The film studio.
Yeah.
They only do indie stuff and everyone can't stop praising them.
Yeah.
They can't stop winning awards. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's not just, you know, Endgame anymore. Right.
Right.
And the comic industry is very scared to take that leap because it's hard to take risks. And, you know, okay, Spider-Man sells 100,000 copies, 50,000 copies, whatever, Black Panther number one and all that stuff. It's great. You know, you make sales and it's easy, but like they don't want to go, hey, let's sell the first Americans. I might have to actually read the back. And
yeah. 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 All right.
It's easy to go, hey, I can sell Batman. I know the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all know who what Bruce is bringing to the table on that one, you know.
Yeah,
you know what you're getting.
Beat up poor people.
And I've had shops who carry indie books come to me and go, "We're doing great. You know, the Marvel numbers and the DC numbers, they're down or whatever, but they're doing great because they sell other books, you know,
yeah.
They sell other things."
That's awesome. See that's yeah, it's interesting because when I was younger, when I was like a student and stuff, I wanted to be like a Marvel or DC artist. Like I really wanted to be like a Marvel contract guy. Like I knew that's what you saw, you know, a couple of the instructors that were there, they were contracted guys. They'd been at Marvel for 10 years and then they'd jump ship and be at DC for another 10. And it was like, they would just, that's what they did. And then as soon as I got out of school, I was like, I don't actually read that stuff though. It's not interesting. All the stuff that I like reading is all like you've been talking about, just these kind of unique stories that are different, that are all across the board. And like, even when I met Bri was, you know, he was kind of meat and potatoes, like what, Ninja Turtles, Batman.
Yeah.
And then since then you're like all over the place.
Yep.
You know, you're reading all kinds of stuff now.
I mean, I am talking about a Marvel book for tonight, but yes, I do read.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, it's hard to follow Marvel and DC stuff because they just
damn near impossible.
They restart things and like I don't know which timeline's what, and you know, so I never really had the dream of I want to be a Marvel writer,
sure.
DC writer. Now, if they came up to me, maybe.
Yeah,
but they're not going to give me, you know, Spider-Man. You know,
sure.
They're not going to let me do a Batman graphic novel, you know, just yet.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I've given my Batman pitch here on this show. I mean, nobody wants me drawing.
Nobody
Batman.
Wants it.
Nobody wants me on Batman.
No.
I have a good idea, Tad. I got
we'll get. What's the idea? What's your Batman idea? I want to hear it.
A Batman idea. Whatever. You can steal it, DC. It's about a detective who comes into Gotham City, who thinks he's the greatest detective on Earth, and he's there to prove that he's the greatest detective on Earth by unmasking Batman.
I like that.
Right? That's great. That would be great. Oh man.
I like that a lot.
Call this guy. Yeah. Come on.
Call him up.
Guy on her. Yeah.
Isn't that good? You can have the Riddler as the bad guy and then you're really, you know, you really get walking on it.
Oh man. You could really have that detective getting his hands dirty to get, you know, intel too.
The detective basically, he goes down the rabbit hole and he goes, okay, well, yeah, shit, maybe he is the best detective, fucking, you know? Because he sacrifices this and that, you know.
See, that's way better than my pitch. My pitch for Batman is,
here we go.
My problem always with Batman is like he's just a regular guy, right? Like even like all the skill, all the mastery, age catches you, man. Like pro athletes, they've got a real short window of like Excelsior, right? Like that, where they're just on top. So I'm thinking like Batman 32. He's already just, man, he's been through it. He's a broken man. He looks great. He's 32 on the surface, but that dude's like 80 years old underneath.
His muscular skeletal system is fucking just, 97. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, all the brain trauma that dude suffered at this point. Yeah. And he just goes to like stop just a casual like ruffian thug. And that thug just works him over. Just takes the bat. And then I think the more like interesting concept is like what would happen with that thug. Like he would become almost like a celebrity, not only in the streets, but maybe even then some, especially if he's like, you know, you throw some social media into the story. Oh, well,
they did that a little bit in The Dark Knight Returns, right? He he fights
with this, the mutant leader.
Yeah, and he beats his ass. He beats him up.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like, oh, I'd be.
Yeah, and he became like famous, didn't he? I forgot. Mm-hmm. Like, he kind of became like a, yeah. Mine would be more of just like modern day. Like it's a dude who's like, I don't know, maybe he's like an ex MMA fighter or something, or he trains MMA. Some dude who used to be like, he's got some moderate skill, but he's in good shape, and he just works over the
He catches Batman. Batman on a bad night and just kicks the shit out. Like, you know, he got in a fight with Catwoman on his way over and his head's not in the game. And yeah.
I mean, if I did a Marvel story, I'd love to do like Spider-Man, like continue the 616 Amazing Spider-Man.
Like
the original run, right, where he's now in his 30s and he'd start running into those problems. And then they kind of had it in the Spider-Verse a little bit too. It's like, I broke my back and I'm old now and I got a pot belly and the whole deal. That's kind of the story I would continue. If that's my Marvel pitch, is you want to sell 100,000 copies to some, just do the original Spider-Man story, keep that one going. And you can tie it into the Spider-Verse stuff that they already have.
There you go.
That's it right there. I would read that Spider-Man. That Spider-Man seems more relatable than the current Spider-Man. Like, he's middle-aged. He's got a bad back.
That's what everyone would say. Like, I'd read this, you know? It's hard following Ultimate. What Spider-Verse are we in? I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
Peter Parker's wife or what? I don't know.
We're speculating... Bri, I think it might be time.
Okay. What?
We go through this every time, Chris. Mm-hmm. Every time I go, like, I think it's time. And then he plays dumb. Like, I don't know he doesn't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I think it's time for the question.
All right. So the question, it's evolved in time. And so it's a two-parter. The first part is, in your opinion, what is the more iconic TV theme song, Magnum PI or the A-Team?
I mean, the beat of Magnum PI comes right up, but probably the I don't know, man. That's like just a little bit before me.
Mm.
Can't even remember the A-Team one off the top of my head.
That's a first. That might be a first.
Like, I'd know it if I heard it.
Sure.
The Magnum PI thing comes in my head.
Yeah.
Has that great beat drop and everything?
Yeah. With the helicopter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Normally we get people who are like, the A-Team, I might not have watched the show, but I know what it sounds like. So this is a real role reversal here, but,
how does it feel, Bri? Finally, you get one in for your boys, Magnum PI.
I'm an A-Team fan at heart, man. Like
all our conversations, I always thought you were rooting for PI to.
I like them both. The A-Team is my favorite show of all time, but I love Magnum PI too.
I hate to say it, but most people would be like, I recognize the Friends theme song.
I know. Never got into it. I was never a fan.
Yeah, but you know the
thing. I do. Everyone. Yeah. It was everywhere.
You know what's weird? My dad was a huge Friends, Green Beret, Special Forces, just kind of a manly man. You turn on Friends. Ooh, everybody, shut up. There's a rerun of Friends.
Are they or aren't they? I gotta know.
That was a conversation thing, Ross and Rachel. Ross has just gotta let her go. It's just not meant to be. You're like, big Joey fan. He was a big fan of Joey. It's the weirdest thing. I don't know. And we'd all be like, what is going on here, man?
Well, it's funny. But okay, so the real question is, you talked a little bit about Batman, you talked a little about Spider-Man. The real question is, if you had the opportunity to do a comic series about any licensed property out there, doesn't necessarily have to be a comic book character. It could be a movie, a book, a show, whatever it might be. What would you want to do?
Oh, that's interesting. If I could, cause I could adapt something from something else. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, if we're sticking with straight comics, like that Amazing Spider-Man, like that would be the series I'd like to do if Marvel could actually wanted to hire me. Let's see, anything else? I mean, not off the top of my head, it's like, you could do a Matrix comic or something.
That could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they've done a Matrix comic.
They had an imprint for a while. The Wachowski brothers or now
sisters
now. Yeah. So they had an actual imprint in early 2000s. It was called Burly Man. I used to have a few of their books. They had Jeff Darrow did a bunch of work for it and things like that. Like they must have had some bucks because they had some big name people. They even did a thing called the last book of theirs I read, it was called Doc Frankenstein. And it was interesting. I think there were a lot of them, they were projects that they were hoping to get developed into film. And then they just, so they were novellas or something. But yeah, they did. I'm pretty sure they did some kind of interesting Matrix comics. And then I think they almost did Godzilla at one point too. I don't know. It was interesting. I didn't read a lot of their books, but they actually had an imprint, which is kind of crazy to think about.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I'd probably just go with Spider-Man, right? That's
easy.
You know, I'd have to really kind of think about that. So let's go with Spider-Man right now. And I've already given my Batman pitch. So.
Yeah. We don't want to give away all the secrets tonight.
That's right. That's right. We got to keep some of it under wraps. So, okay. Okay.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, we're starting to kind of wind down, as like we do with every episode. We like to get into what everybody's reading. And because you're our guest, Chris.
Got to go first. Guest of honor.
Yeah. Guest of
honor. Oh, what am I reading right now? I got.
Yeah.
I got The Last Ronin, right?
Nice.
I got The Last Ronin. I got to read that. Someone spoiled who the turtle is for me already, which sucks. But
yeah, they do it in the first issue too, so you figure it out really quick.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So I don't have to be too butthurt about it.
No.
Then I got Black Sad here. I got a new Black Sad.
I didn't know there was a new Black Sad.
They All Fall Down, Part 1 is what I just picked up from my local store here. This came out a few years ago, so I'm reading that. So those are the two books I'm reading now. I'm also reading One Piece. I'm on the One Piece train. So
how is that? Because I'm always hesitant to get into a lot of the anime or manga, just because you have to commit. I feel like if you're gonna do manga, you got to commit to it. And some of these series have 40 books. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean I'm on volume 32 of who knows, 100 volume or whatever. You know,
yeah.
I kind of look at it as more of here's a series I can read and take my time and know I have more forward to it. So I'm not in a rush to read it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the attitude I take, just take it a little bit at a time and treat it like a marathon, really.
Mm-hmm.
like a long, slow marathon. So that's what I'm, so I'm reading that. I'm also reading Slam, which is another manga about basketball.
I've heard of that. Oh. Yeah.
How's that?
That came out in the 90s. And I identified real quick that it's inspired by Michael Jordan and the Bulls and stuff like that. And that imagery and that popularity during the time. And it's really good. It's really funny.
Okay.
I know it's Otani's favorite book too.
Oh, nice.
Favorite book.
Wow.
LA Dodger guy. So
he should have came to Seattle, man, but we're cheap. So
are you a Dodgers fan?
I'm a big Dodgers fan.
Nice.
Okay. Dodgers. That was my family. That's the family's baseball team is the Dodgers. LA Dodgers, baby.
I'm a big Dodgers fan. And I knew Otani was going to come here. So instead of being he should have come here, I was for a year, I was he's going to be on the Dodgers.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much that was the best place for him to go. Yeah. I get it.
But so I going back to Kurosawa and stuff, I keep an eye on Japanese media because there's just so much crossover. And there's so many things about the manga industry, which is so successful and doing well, right? The news story is that comics are losing numbers and manga is exploding. So what's the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
They treat their creators better. The creators are they're the main part of the book, that part of the, you know, the marketing of it, you know,
yeah.
The One Piece creator, he's famous and, you know, he's treated well and he gets to make his book. And you look at American comics, it's just a different writer on different books all the time. There's no consistency. There's no consistency to it. So it's like, you know, new issue number one of Spider-Man, what, you know, what happened in the other ones? Who knows? You know, so, you know, that's manga's doing really well right now. And I'm just trying to find ways to translate that into the American market.
Nice.
Oh. Wow. Right. Right. What did you read?
So I picked up, it caught my eye mostly because of the cover. I picked up the first issue of Wolverine Madripoor Knights. So it had the Cap, Black Widow, and Wolverine on the cover. And it's a Claremont. Claremont wrote it. And so immediately I was like, oh, Wolverine by Claremont. That makes me happy. And then it's got...
Is this a newer book? Or
it just dropped. Yeah, it just came out last week. Yeah, and... Edgar Salazar is on the art with Carlos Lopez is the color artist on it. And I think it's going to be a mini series. So it kind of starts with like Wolverine as Patch, which I always love. Always love him dressed up as Patch, you know, in the white tux, with the eye patch. Oh, yeah. Just looks slick, man. And then there's a cool callback to X-Men 268, which is that awesome Jim Lee cover.
Is that the one with Cap and Black Widow and
yeah.
Wolvie?
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, yeah, they reference it in the comic about how kind of the last time I was in Madripoor, and then it says, you know, for details, see classic X-Men 268, which I loved. I love the throwback to that, man. That makes me happy, back to the callback. And I think the art looks great. They all fight the Hand, and then it's also got Jubilee in it, who I know you love. It's got,
she doesn't get in, you know, I feel like they need to do, if they want to get real serious, you know, Jubilee just got cast out of the X-Men
mm-hmm.
years ago, mm-hmm. just forgotten about. She was, I don't get it, man. Like, she should hate them.
Yeah. And it also brings back, you've got Psylocke in it as well, which I also love. Okay. Big Psylocke guy. And then it kind of ends with, it looks like it's just going to be a mini series of Cap, Wolverine, and Black Widow just wrecking Madripoor, which I'm all for it. I'm all for it. And I love the way that Claremont writes Wolverine. I think he's my second favorite Wolverine writer outside of, you know, Barry Windsor Smith. The best.
Do you have a favorite Wolverine artist? I'm just curious.
Barry Windsor Smith. I mean...
You take Barry over Buscema.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you have it, folks.
I think
there
I would. I just, I love Weapon X so much, dude. Like, I think it's the best.
I mean, Barry was tapping into the cosmos for that one. He was doing some special things.
Yeah, but I mean, the both of them, it's like 1A and 1B. You know what I mean? Like, either one of them, you can't miss. Edgar Salazar, I mean, he does a really good job in this too. I think his art is fantastic. But yeah, man, I like the way that Claremont does like Wolverine's, not just his dialogue, but the way that he does like his thought process, like the narrative of him too. I think he just does a really good job.
Okay. So yeah, it's, man, from the perspective of Wolverine.
Yes.
Most of the story.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and is it a Wolverine comic if he doesn't say I'm the best at what I do and what I do isn't nice? It's not.
I gotta be honest. I hate when they do give him these like catchphrases.
I love it.
I know, but it's like, it, you know, it's
the
like,
one guy who wouldn't have a catchphrase.
Yeah. He is, but I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Wolverine would never have a catchphrase. Thank you. Thank you.
But yeah.
Pizza time.
Yeah, that would be great.
Listen,
shink.
I mean, he's got to slice him and dice him. I mean, you know. But yeah, they all fight. It's basically like a big throwdown in Madripoor with the Hand, which I always love. So
you know what? You may have sold me because it's got like all of my childhood favorites: Cap, Cap and Wolverine were like the only guys I actually like paid attention to as a kid.
Yeah.
Then you throw like, you know, Jubilee, Psylocke,
yeah.
Black Widow. I mean, all right, I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay. I might actually pick that
up. It looks good, dude. It looks good too. Cause that's, you know, it's gotta look good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And it's like Wolverine's healing factor isn't working. So he's getting cut up. And the end is like, well, if you're fine, why aren't you healing? And it kind of ends on that with, you know, with the team up of Black Widow and Cap too. So it was great, man. It's nice. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, so, cause you know, Cap's my all time hardcore childhood favorite. Does Cap wreck some folks?
Dude, that was probably one of my favorite lines about, that Wolverine in the narrative. He's like, I'll say one thing. Guy sure knows how to make an entrance. And, you know, he dives through a glass building, shield first, knocks out 15 dudes, jumps up on a wall, yeah. Shield throws another 15.
All right.
Like,
they're doing him right.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted.
Yeah. They're doing him justice. They're doing him justice.
They're doing him justice. Yeah. Wow.
Okay. What did you read?
Okay. I didn't read anything.
Wow. Wow. Shitbag.
But I'm an artist, all right? Art supports art. So are you a gentleman familiar with Katsuya Terada? He's a Japanese comic artist and illustrator. Do you guys know him?
Only from what you've shown me.
Okay. Well, he's up there with like Kim Jong-ji and some of those other guys. Kim Jong-ji's Korean, but they would do like some collabs and stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And so a few years ago, Terada had a couple exhibits, and they were just in like, you know, Tokyo, they do like these really cool like pop-up galleries, right? And they'll only be for like a few days or like a week or so, but they always have little zines and stuff. And I was able to finally get my hands on two of the zines from his, the theme was Hot Pot Girls, and it was just like, I don't know if you guys can see it, but
mm-hmm.
It's just these cool like illustrations. Anyways, it's the little zines from the gallery. And I don't know. I just love this guy's work. It's so much different than like how I draw, and better. I'm just going to say that way better. But he's always been like a guy that like I fell in love with his work years ago. And so I got two of the zines showed up. And then he did this other series of like, it was like concept art that he put into these little ash cans and that I've been trying to get a hold of. And it was basically like he did two of them and he would do them in the morning while he was pressing and drinking coffee. And so it's like basically his coffee series. And mm-hmm. I think they did a gallery for these as well, but you know, it's in Japan. I wasn't going to get to go, but I was able to get my hands on them and they're just this fun art. Everything is themed with, you know, coffee. You know, every character's got like some type of coffee pot or they're drinking coffee or, you know, like the back of this one is, you know, just a picture of his coffee. And it is interesting is like guys, you know, these big name artists, like these guys that are actually like famous, you just assume that these guys like wake up in the morning and they just hit the ground running because they're so prolific
mm-hmm.
like, artistically, like not only in just like the dexterity of their minds and being continually creative, but they're also just producing at such a high level, just such a volume of work. And he addresses that. There's this nice essay in there where he talks about how like sometimes when he wakes up, he just like all of us just doesn't want to go to work, you know, like this has become his job, even though it's his passion. And it was just kind of refreshing to have some perspective to this guy that I've built up in my mind as like this superstar god art dude in Japan who just wakes up, farts and creates magic on the page. And now he's like having the same, like it's 8 a.m. I'm drinking this coffee and my cats won't shut up. I do not want to be here, but I have to do this. And it was refreshing to get some perspective like that of like, okay, like I'm not that far removed from him. I'm going through the same things this guy's going through. And this guy's like, you know, in my opinion, one of the best to do it. I don't really buy, I haven't been buying a lot of comics lately. Yeah. I've been trying to find more these like ash cans and rare little sketchbooks if I can get a hold of them. And, you know, I mean, I'm always bugging Bri, Chris, for he'll go to a convention. I'll be like, I need you to go and see if there's this one issue of this Dell comic that came out in 67. I don't care how thrashed it is. I just want a copy of it. It sucks, but
I found it, but we couldn't, he didn't want to pay for it.
How much? Well, I'm not paying $100. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Not when it's like falling apart. No way. But
it's hard when you're working in comics and then you got to read comics, but you're also reading scripts and other things. It's like, I barely have time, you know?
Yeah.
Barely have time.
Well, then like, I try and be well-rounded because I'd say one of the things I see with my peers is sometimes they get so immersed in this industry that it's like, that's it. All they do is they talk about comics. They read about comics. Their entire life is comics. And so like when you try and strike up a conversation outside of it, there's nothing there, you know? And I don't want to be one of those guys necessarily. So mm-hmm. I try and limit my comic intake so much, like just, okay, just look for the diamonds in the rough. That's it. Just look for those unique things that you'll get something special out of. I know guys, I've got a couple friends that they just buy everything that comes out every week. And like, I commend them. I couldn't do it. They just go through, I bet they must drop like $100 a week at the comic shop. Just a big stack of books, you know? Which is great. That's cool. But man,
I watch all these YouTubers who just buy stuff every week and they follow every storyline and stuff. It's a lot. I mean, those are the dedicated creators or dedicated readers. And right. You're trying to get into that pile, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
You're winning the bucks, you know? I hope you go to the comic shop that's not only Marvel DC, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I commend those people. I sometimes just kind of get burnt. And also, when you start, I mean, you probably run into this. When you start making comics, you start getting kind of, I don't want to say snooty, but you know what's good and you kind of start knowing what's not good. And it's really hard. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I don't take in because I'm like, oh, that could have been executed a lot better.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'll read like a Walking Dead and I'll be like, this editor didn't tell this artist this. And I'll get upset and like, damn, I should have been the editor, you know?
I
would have fixed this problem. And you watch some of these YouTube guys, they'll be like 10 most, you know, anticipated comics. And then they do the reviews like 3 days later and like, this book's okay. Yeah, this book sucks. this run's kind of lame. Anyway, next week's top 10, the next, you know, issue 2. It's like, oh boy, you know, rough.
Yeah.
Since we're winding down, before we let you go, one question I want to ask you, what would you tell people? Because one of the big things I get hit up with here and there is people that want to make their own comics, you know, a lot of times they'll actually get it made, but then they'll run into the problem of actually fabricating their comic, like having it printed and building a website and finding a distributor, like, because all that is just, it's a lot. People, like, it's so hard to just write and get art for the comic, but then you have the whole, like physical production of it, you know, like, and distribution. What advice would you give for those type of people that are like, they've got their book that's made, it's sitting on a hard drive, they just need to print it and get it out into the world? What would be your big advice for them?
I mean, that's tough because, like, you know, normally I'd want to say, hey, just, you know, submit it everywhere. And as I said, it could be great and most places are just going to either ignore you or whatever, you know, like that's kind of why I did my own company. It's like, might as well, if I'm going to do all the work and even if you get an image or something, they're charging you for like the editors and all that stuff. So by the time you get money back, it's like, you're paying for the diamond, you're paying for the ads itself. So why not?
Yeah.
Why am I even, you know, I'd rather get all the money back. So you know, probably go intern for free at Boom or one of these other publishers and try to see how it works, right?
Oh,
you know, yeah. probably try to work at, you know, if you're in the Midwest, try to work at one of those companies and try to see how it is. That's where I learned some of this stuff. But it's hard, you know, you got to print it, you got to find the right printer, you got to find the distribution's really tough too. So,
yeah.
I mean, we're lucky Diamond took us. They used to have like rules of you have to print a certain, they have to sell a certain amount to have you, you know.
Right. Like,
they don't do that now, but it's tough. You know, like what's the advice? Yeah, try to learn how to do it, really. And try to learn to do as many things on your own as possible. You know, you want to try to save money. I really only hire UTAD and a letterist. And then I put everything else. I learned how to do InDesign and put all the books together. And I built my own website. You know, you can use like Wix.com or some of these other website builders. And, you know, having a website's not that expensive, honestly.
I feel like that's almost like one of the cheaper aspects nowadays of operating is like the website's the easy part, you know, with like Squarespace, Wix, some of these other free, you know, like even like Big Cartel, some of these other spaces where you can just have your product right there, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe just kind of like take things a step at a time, do a small print run. You know, I use Greco printing. They're in Florida for like small print runs and stuff. Anyone can do that. And then just like attend shows, you know, you can get into artist alleys in almost any show, especially if you have comics. So like, that's the best way to kind of start and get feedback and stuff. And then some of your next projects will be better, right?
Like
the idea needs to be, for any new creator, the idea should be you're getting better, you're coming out with new stuff, you know, you're getting used to working with artists and stuff. I mean, you know, the difference between you and I working together, the cowboy with many hats, now we've worked together for so long, I know how to write a script that you are good at. You know, I can tailor it to your style.
Yeah.
Your style more. So, persistence and longevity.
Yeah. Okay. Like persistence, longevity, do your homework, start small. That's what I'm getting out of that.
Mm-hmm.
All in a step at a time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And even I'm still like, oh, this didn't sell as much as I want. Like it sold a lot more than normally do, but like, I want it to be through the roof. You know, you just, your expectations, it's got to temper them, you know, a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't yeah.
Too discouraged.
That is, I like that. Definitely that. Don't get discouraged. Temper expectations. Like you said earlier, I think people get into comics thinking like, I've got my book, I'm going to be famous. And
next Frank Miller, baby, let's go.
Yeah. it's a very long road, and it's finding your readers that are going to support you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the company itself's like 7 years old. And so we just got distribution last year. So that tells you like how much we had to build up just to get distribution, you know?
Wow.
We had to build up a while before we got a booth at San Diego Comic-Con. So it's just one of those things. You're going to have to be in the industry for a while. And even if like you get a book and an image or something, or IDW, for example, it's like, it doesn't just stop there. You know, like you're not just going to sell a million copies just because you're an image.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Because look, they do all the top 10 books, whatever, you know, it's like 8 Marvel and DC books, 1 Boom book, 1 Image book. So it's like, even if you're an image, you're fighting against the grain still.
Yeah.
Yep.
So wild. So wild. It's yeah. Wild. One of the things I'll run into guys occasionally, and they'll have their book coming out, and I'll go, oh,
you know, are you doing any press for it? Are you doing any interviews? Are you getting the word out? And they're always like, what do you mean I have to advertise the book too? And I'm like, yeah. Like, the book comes out, what? And they're like, oh, in like a couple weeks. You should probably get, you got to start promoting it, man. You have to promote it or it's not, no one's going to know about it.
Yeah.
A lot of people get stuck in the Kickstarter cycle, you know, I like to call it, where it's just like they're only promoting their Kickstarter. And then when the book comes out, they're on to the next Kickstarter. So they never really like market the actual book afterwards when it comes out. So you're, you know, really you're just doing pre-orders with Kickstarter.
It's just so crazy.
And look, the First Americans, we've had this printed for a few years now, but it's like we re-release it, and yeah, I'm on like 8 podcasts right now trying to promote this stuff. So like,
yeah,
we're all little introvert artists and writers and stuff, but like you have to get out, you know, you have to get out there. If someone promotes a movie, they're on TV shows and stuff, you know, I mean, that's just how it goes.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's great that you're doing that, man. Putting in the work. It's really been kind of amazing to watch Critical Entertainment, because I mean, I guess I've knew you before it was Critical Entertainment, just slowly like grow and morph into this thing where like now it's like, oh no, this is like a diamond distributed company. It's pretty inspiring. It's pretty inspiring to watch.
It's doable, you know, it's tough. You just know, right, if you're starting a new company, you're going against a lot of other little companies, and then a lot of like, you know, they say Image is what, indie, Boom is indie. No, they're not. They're big.
No, not in, they deal with licensed properties. They're not indie.
The fact that half these companies are like, yeah, no, we're just a small independent publisher. And it's like, dude, you publish Ninja Turtles or you publish Power Rangers. That's nothing independent about that.
Yeah. Not even remotely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Transformers. That's indie. Oh man. Shit. That's been indie since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Well, Bri, I think we're starting to wind down. You want to take us home, my man?
Let's do it. All right, Tiger Cubs, you know what to do. You know that if you want to find the home of Blue Tiger Revenge podcast, the intellectual dark web of comic book podcasting, there's only one place that you can go, and that is bluetigerrevenge.substack.com. It is where we post every episode, everything that we do, and the best part about it, Tad, do you know what the best part about our Substack page is?
Is it because it's free?
It's because it's free and it's easy. Do you know what you have to do? You know what you can do?
What?
You can just subscribe by just putting in your email address. And then every time we post a new episode, it goes directly to their inbox.
Wait a minute. You mean I can just like essentially just sign up and then all of the Tiger Milk just flows right to me?
Comes right to you. Yeah, that's it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I feel like people should tell all their friends, tell all their family, just to everyone that they know. If you're at work,
enemies.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're at work, tell all of your coworkers about the Tiger Milk. You know, it's for everybody. It's for if you like milk, if you don't like milk, whatever kind of milk that you like, there's a Tiger Milk for you. It's amazing. God. I lost it. I had it and I lost it. That's the story of my life. And then finally, want to thank Chris Retta from Critical Entertainment, man. Thanks for coming in the Tiger Den with us today.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Tad. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Where can the Tiger Cubs out there, the thirsty Tiger Cubs, go to find your books?
All right. So, you know, the easiest way is to go into your comic book shop and ask for some of our titles. The First Americans issue 1 comes out March 27th. If you want any other info, you can go to our website at www.criticalentertainmentla.com. Follow us on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, all that stuff, all the social media. And, you know, shoot us a DM if you have any questions and get some comics out to you.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, man. And looking forward to seeing your books on the shelves. And that is all I have, Tad. Do you have anything else?
One more thing. Chris, where can the Tiger Cubs, because we have a lot of West Coast listeners.
We do.
Where can they come and see you in person? Are you going to be doing any of the convention circuit this year?
So the easiest way to get to know us really is by going to either San Diego Comic-Con, Anaheim's WonderCon, or LA Comic-Con. You know, eventually we'll get back up to Emerald City. But those are the West Coast ones we're at. And any new writer, artist, you know, if they want to try to submit some to us, it's best to come up to us at a show and get to know us first. Very hard to take on new submissions. But if we get to know you, it becomes much easier if we see you like over and over again.
Very cool. Very cool. There you go, folks. Get out to WonderCon, LA Con, San Diego Con, and come see Critical Entertainment. And Bri, I am all out of Tiger Milk.
Well, if that is the case, what time is it?
Hit the music, sir.